Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. Happy Memorial Day to all. Today I'm happy to have Martin Johnson in the studio. How are you, Marty?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. How are you doing, Greg?
Well, I'm here. I'm here, and that's good enough.
I've noticed.
Martin has been working in the biz for many, many years now. We worked together at the Bedford Cheese Shop many years ago. Can you give us a little intro of how you got into cheese and what you're doing now?
Sure. How I got into cheese is easy. I was a freelance writer and needed a job that had steady paychecks, and I had worked in the deli section of a big Texas superstore when I was in high school, and I thought, that'll be the same. I'll just do that in New York. I very quickly discovered that New York was not Texas, and that we had five types of cheddar. New York cheese departments were a little more diverse than that, and I was fascinated by the diversity and got into it from there. I wound up running some cheese counters. I wound up stepping away from it when the freelance journalism took wing. I came back to it around 2003. Worked my way back up, wound up running a cheese counter on the Upper West Side on Columbus Avenue. And when I was doing that, I began running the beer program as well. And I found that there were similar strategies to making both things work. And now what I'm doing is I've transitioned over to the other side, as they say, and work in a specialty craft beer buyer for West Side Market's East Village location, which I'm proud to say has one of the best beer programs in the city.
That's great. I don't drink beer anymore, so now, you know, whenever everybody says that to me, I'm like, great, thanks a lot. Telling me you like the things that I like best, and you have the best things, and I can no longer go there by them. But I can smell the beers, right?
Smell them, yes. many of my beers are very aromatic.
That's true. So how have you been able to, like, navigate your way through the food biz, and then why?
That's a toughie. A lot of it is that there's a lot that's meritocratic about the food business in New York. Can I curse on the air?
The fuck are you talking about?
Good. If you know your shit, you can do stuff. Yeah. And that appealed to me enormously because in journalism was not necessarily meritocratic. It's more meritocratic now than it was, largely because there's no money. And so it's not just that, you know, it's the only people that survive are people that know their shit. But in the food business, there was, you really had to know what was going on. You had to know your ass from your elbow, and that appealed to me. And being able to do that and speak with some level of eloquence, I wouldn't know Barack Obama or nothing, but I could speak, was enabled me to kind of establish things. That, and I like people. I think I'm from a family of born educators, and I didn't want to become a college professor, which now looking back was maybe not the brightest idea. But you know, I like sort of being Dr. Feelgood or Professor Feelgood for people. You know, it's like, hey, here's the good stuff. I've got it. What is that good stuff? Well, this is why it's really good. That's a cheese made from sheep's milk in the French Pyrenees. They do a lot of good stuff there. Or my case today, well, that's you don't like IPAs, well, that's a Saison, it's a farmhouse ale. There's a great backstory to that. And you know, I enjoy enlightening people about why they like what they like. And I particularly like seeing people connect those dots, because I think that's where you just get beyond the, oh, this is good, and it gets beyond that into something that we might even call knowledge. And furthermore, it makes them a customer, a loyal customer to wherever it is I'm working, and it makes them a more informed customer so they can get to the next level of talking about cheese or talking about beer or talking about whatever, really.
Yeah, you're a smart enough man to know that you can teach and learn at the same time.
Oh, for sure.
And you have the acumen to deal with the customers. Some of them are trying to test you. They don't really want to buy things. They just want to see how much you know and torture you a little bit. And I've worked with you at the counter, and you're very good with those people, whereas I'd usually physically remove them from the store in our time together. I think you speak of you know, anybody that really wants to be doing that thing that we do on a real level and make it last has to have what you touched on, which was the ability to sort of understand the operational needs of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And not put your knowledge before the operations of the business, learning how to work that in, I would say.
Oh, for sure. No, I think it's not an arena for self-aggrandizement.
Well, it has become that, in my opinion. I've seen that,
mm-hmm.
not with you personally, but I have seen that go on a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that when that happens, individuals forget the fundamentals, the basics, retail basics that sell cheese for them. And they get lost, and things aren't organized correctly in a lot of cheese shops. I don't know. You've seen a lot of cheese shops. Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I would agree with that within a lot of cheese shops. And also, let's not mince words. I've worked for some businesses that were nothing more than vanity projects. And so,
but that's okay, too. If the money's coming in and they're letting you do what you want, then your philosophy of protecting the food system can still exist within the vanity projects themselves.
Oh, it absolutely did. When I was up on the Upper West Side for 3 years, I mean, I look at my alumni association and I'm kind of like, wow. But overall, yeah, you have to do things right. And I think that you have to, okay, so when I was a teenager, I was living in Dallas, and I was about to realize my dream of going to college in New York City, and I had, and I was spending a week in Chicago, which is where I was born, and my godmother, who was an amazing woman, she was the first black woman to get a PhD from Northwestern. She took me out to lunch to sort of give me some pointers. And I'd already admired her greatly. So, frankly, if she wanted to take me out to lunch and just talk the entire time, I was perfectly happy to listen. She didn't. We talked And then at the end, I was thinking, well, this was a nice social visit. And at the end, she's like, let me tell you two things you're going to need, not just to succeed in college, but to succeed in life. And so I stiffened up, got all ready, you know, thought I should take notes maybe. I was prepared for a long speech. She said, thick skin. And I looked and I was like, well, okay, that sounds like reasonable. Poker face.
Mm.
And then she hugged me and said, good luck in college, and headed back to her job. And the funny thing is that's largely true. Those are two skills that are essential in the retail business and essential in the food business. Listen, I'm African American.
Right.
I'm even better. I'm African American. I don't look like I'm close to retirement age. And I have pretty broad shoulders. Once a week on my beer aisle at Westside Market, even in the ever so progressive East Village, somebody mistakes me for the stock guy. And I have to try it, and I have to explain to them.
And you think that's because you're black?
I'm sure that's because I'm black.
Well, I ask, you say sure.
I'm quite sure because you can tell it on people's faces. I mean, they're directed to me, and they have a question. Maybe I'm in the back area where in the growler station, and somebody directs somebody to me, and they're like, oh. Well, they look at me and say, oh, well, I was wondering if you carry any of the Mars unfiltered lagers, looking at me like I wouldn't know that. And I was like, well, absolutely, I do. Let me show you to them. They're in our German single bottle section. And it's like, and they're like, oh, you know what that is. And I was like, well, I'm the buyer here. What I do is, honestly, I've learned to let that go in one ear and out the other.
And you think that is, and I'm putting it out there, you think that is just institutionalized racism?
I don't parse why it is.
Because, see, I get that question all the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
I get that question in a different way.
Right.
You know? I've been looked at the help, as the help,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the help.
Right.
You know? And I don't have those sort of... I was not given that lesson. And I was given that lesson in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father told me, you know, don't give it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Face,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Thick skin was more like don't take shit from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
I mean, when I went to college, I was lucky in a certain way. I went to school to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
20 years later, here we are. I knew there was no money in it,
mm-hmm.
and I loved cheese. And
mm-hmm.
I wanted to get out of being the help, but I really liked the things that I was around.
Mm-hmm.
And did you find that you loved the things that you were around more and to push you away from those sort of antiquated dichotomies that exist in retail business, in doing retail business? Am I making any sense here?
I was going to try to parse your question just for a minute there. I mean, if you can be a little more specific, I'm not sure what you mean.
Do you think that the lessons that I were taught
mm-hmm.
were that much different than the lessons that you were taught that both allowed us to get to where
sure.
we wanted to get?
Yeah, sure.
Because
sure.
I think they were kind of the same.
They were. They're absolutely similar. I mean, that's the interesting thing. I'm not 100%. Well, I'm not at all persuaded that I got where I wanted to get. I got where I can deal.
Right.
I mean,
and what is that for you?
I mean, I tell people simply as this: I am. It's a gig economy, and I have three gigs. I am a jazz critic at the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
I am the sales. I'm New York City sales and marketing guy for Lively Run Farms, and I'm the specialty craft beer buyer for Westside Market.
Great.
And sort of between those three things, rent gets paid. I mean, am I secure for the future? No, I don't think that I'm going to be able to be the specialty craft beer buyer for a nearby fancy grocery store for, you know, when I'm 72. But, you know, when it works out for when I'm 57. And, of course, I have a wide variety of sort of woulda, coulda, shouldas. But I feel like I'm here and I have enough solvency that I can pursue the next big thing. And that's something that I haven't had for about 10 years. So,
well, I would interject this. Like, yeah. I've known you for a long time. We run in the same circles because mm-hmm. we're older. And Marty, like, I call you Marty.
That's
you
cool.
I've always called you Marty.
That's cool.
I always wanted a friend I could call Marty. And we worked together at the cheese shop. You became Marty. You know?
And, worked for me.
You know? And people would ask, you know, they ask, who's the staff? Who's the mm-hmm. staff at Bedford? And, you know, you got this guy, you know. But everybody would get it. It'd be like, oh, mm-hmm. no, that's person X. Is that? Gay kid. Oh, mm-hmm. gay kid, right, that. Who's that? Who's Greg? He's a boss. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, mm-hmm. he's the boss, you know. Who's Charlotte, you know? Mm-hmm. Charlotte's also a boss. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, you know, who Marty? Marty's a cheesemonger. He's mm-hmm. an older guy, mm-hmm. you know. You know, oh, Marty, yeah, he's a black guy, mm-hmm. you know. But it does, I think it's different in certain elements in terms of that. And I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I always, you and I always talk about this kind of shit when we get together. But I hope you are where you want to be. And I hope that the people that we work with and support our industry understand that you're an important man. And, you know, deserving of everything you get without any sort of ridiculous things.
I get that in the beer business. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that, in fact, I think I get it almost too much in the beer business. I've taken to hanging out at a bar where nobody knows me sometimes just so that I can be alone with my thoughts and my beer. I mean, last night I was doing exactly that. Even, I mean, I was there. I was in the place because I'm friends with the bartender. But still, the place was a zoo, and I was perfectly fine with that because it was a zoo where nobody knew me.
He recognized you?
She knows me. Actually, she comes by my store on her way to work, so we're pals. But you know, and then I thought, oh, this is so nice. I'm going to game plan my week. I'm going to outline a couple of things. This is going to be great. Mm-hmm. Collect my thoughts for an hour and a half or so over some really good beers. And then I went over. I dropped by another bar just for a nightcap on my way home, and the bartender knew me. One of the customers knew me. The bartender, you know, is in the beer business. He thinks, oh my God, it's one of the beer gods of New York. Hey, everybody, you know, and it was fine. It was, the adoration was nice. But man, I spent like the next 90 minutes sort of having people funneled my way. And I was kind of like,
that's great.
This is flattering, but I just want to have a beer, go home.
Yeah, you can't bitch about people knowing and loving you.
No, no,
you're
not
smiling
at all.
And
not
laughing.
At all.
No,
not at all.
It's
not
a good
at all.
Thing.
Not at all. It's an immensely good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, and if you know, I've only ever been white. I've only ever mm-hmm. been this guy.
Yeah. Know? And no, I mean, there are, you know, the same sort of racial thing I was talking about that happens with class, that happens with gender. I mean,
it happens, you know, with sexual preferences.
Yeah, it's, exactly.
What I love about cheese is that there's a very solid group of people that fit into all of those paradigms, mm-hmm. and we all get along well.
Oh, for sure.
And thumb our nose at the people who don't understand us. That's what I kind of like. We're allowed to be assholes to one another because that's just how it is.
Yeah.
But we're only allowed to be that way to each other.
Right.
So if anybody else, you know, wanted to make some commentary, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, we would just bury them underneath some pig farm there. But, you know, hopefully that
or
won't happen.
Bury them underneath some pig, maybe.
Yes. So, moving on from that, do you have a favorite moment working in cheese in NYC? Like an epiphany moment?
I have funny stories to tell, but...
We got time.
I don't know if there was an... I mean, the two moments that I come back to were, one, the very sort of first moment, going back to my very first job, of course.
Where?
Which was at a place that is not known for specialty food because they gave it up over 20 years ago. It was Bloomingdale's. They had a specialty food division. The long story short,
and a pretty good one for a while.
Well, yeah. The long story short of it is they walked into Balducci's, which was a great place, which was a temple of specialty food back in the early 80s or late 70s, before then. And they essentially walked in and said, "Everybody that's not a member of the family, meet us on the corner. We have a 30% raise for you." And they gutted the middle management of Balducci's, took them all uptown to 59th and Lexington, and set up a phenomenal
food court,
exactly. And I'd gotten hired to work in what was called the Pit. It had charcuterie, cheese, and prepared foods. And I was told I would get 3 days of training before tying on an apron and diving in. And I thought, oh, how cool. Well, the 3 days of training all focused on learning to say, with the proper accent, the proper intonation, and the proper head tilt, "Welcome to Bloomingdale's.
Oh, yeah.
How may I help you today?" And after 2 days and 3 days, 7.5 hours each of that, in the last half hour of the third day, we were sent to our sales areas to learn our sales areas. And needless to say, a counter as complex as the Pit, there was I needed 15 minutes on the welcome to Bloomingdale's part, and maybe 3 days on the learning the inventory. So
that's so backwards.
When my first full day in the Pit, my very first customer was this very haughty Trinidadian woman who comes up and orders New York Chevre. I thought that was New York cheddar, and so I reached down for the big orange block, unwrapped it, and confidently put a knife on it and said, "How about that much?" And she started railing at me with the kind of garbled tones that you hear from the adults on Charlie Brown. And I'm thinking, oh, crap. This is my first full day on the job. This is not going
That's
well.
That's the banshee cry of the rich.
And suddenly, when a coworker kind of swooped in, looked at her and said, "You mean New York Chev," with huge authority. And she shut up very quickly. He piped up, popped open, you're going to smile, a little cylinder of goat folks.
Nice.
And wrapped it up for her and sent her on her way. After which he gave me a taste of it, and we both kind of savored how delicate and how light and fluffy it all was. And and then he turns to me and says, "And it's much better than the Coach Farm." And I'm thinking to myself,
yes,
wow,
it is.
Okay, so there's authority. There's authority. There's hipness. There's great tasting food here. This is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, that sort of thing.
And just having someone have your back that super bitch came up and wanted to make you look like an asshole because she didn't know what she wanted, and that's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got to have your brothers in the Pit with you to be like, "No, excuse me, we'll take care of this person.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what you want. And we'd like you to leave."
And one of the great ironies is that goat folks got their milk from Lively Run.
Nice.
And so here I am 33 years later working with Lively Run. So it's kind of a cool, full circle.
That's awesome. And that's a good way to start. And how about your worst moment where you were going to give up?
Yeah, that was about 3 years ago. I built this cheese counter on Columbus at a place on Columbus Avenue.
Yes, I remember.
I had a beer section as well. It was my first time building, actually working with beer rather than just drinking the stuff. And we with no organizational support, we built this, close to $7,000 a month section, profit center in the back. We got notoriety in the food section of the Wednesday Times, cover of it, as a matter of fact. We also got a nice write-up in New York Magazine, which called us one of the 8 best places to buy cheese.
Name?
Pardon?
Name?
Of?
The? Shop?
Oh, Gastronomy 491. And
are they still around?
Barely.
Well, that's probably because you're not there.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, we carried about 100 cheeses at our peak. When I was last there about 2 years ago, they had about 15 cheeses. So, at any rate, I was told by the owner that she needed to cut my pay by 30%. And that I was really never worth what I was being paid in the first place.
And how did she make that judgment?
She made that judgment on the basis that she was simply playing house. It was not, you know, it was a vanity project, not a business.
Let me ask you a question. Did you make any mistakes?
Did I make mistakes? Sure, I guess.
There's no way you couldn't have made mistakes.
Right, exactly.
Because you had no support.
Right. I mean, the mistake I made was probably sticking it out. I mean, I worked there for just shy of 3 years, and I had people telling me within 6 months that you're not going to genius your way out of this one. You got to get out of here. But I thought to myself, I have such an amazing crew. I can't walk out on this crew.
That's a tough thing to do.
You know, and so it wasn't until really the crew had diminished a bit, and but the low point wasn't so much leaving there. I mean, I could see that moment was approaching. The low point was looking for other work and having so many people tell me I should take a $10 an hour job and work my way up again. I was 54 and I'd done that twice.
Right.
And I thought to myself,
yeah, and fuck that.
Yeah, I thought to myself, and going on interviews and being told, oh, we actually hired somebody this morning, but we just wanted to see, you're so not the type. I thought, yeah, let me go home and put beer on my resume and see what happens. And, within a couple of weeks of doing that, I had a 10-week consultancy with another place that didn't really get it. And when that ended, put up more feelers and walked into Westside Market and threw it via one of them. And I walked in via the cheese people who were eager to have me. But the store GM was like, oh, you know about beer. Well, we're supposed to have, the owners want us to create the best beer program in New York City. And I was like, whoa. Well, the best beer program in the East Village alone is going to be a tall order. But if you guys want to go for it, we can have some fun. And the guy just literally reached onto his belt loop, unhitched his keys, tossed them to me. And I was like, is this what I think it is? It's like, yeah, it's the keys to the car. Where are we going? We want to have some fun.
Nice.
And
pretty much, you turn around. You turn the worst moment around into the best one.
Yeah, I rebound it pretty nicely.
And that's, I think, a big thing about this job. You have to be prepared to do that.
Oh, yeah.
We all, and people like us that go in and take these suicide missions, we do. I do those, you know. Mm-hmm. I work in the middle of a big, big, big company. Right. Now it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, yep. And it's getting harder and harder and harder. And you know, the original ideas that built the company, the original brick and mortar ideas, mm-hmm. I hold on to like grim death, mm-hmm. because that's what works, you know?
Right.
And I find myself up against things I don't understand, mm-hmm. myself. Mm-hmm. And it's a rough feeling, you know, when you're there, you gave three years of your life to something that you wanted, you know, and it didn't happen, and it probably hurt you pretty bad, but you jumped right back in the job you wanted, not the job that people were telling you
right.
you should get.
Right.
Nice work, bro. That's really, that's the story, though. That's our story. That's
right,
the
right.
cheesemaker's, the cheesemonger's mm-hmm. journey in metropolitan New York.
Oh, for sure.
In a nutshell, mm-hmm. right there, you know?
Yeah.
You hold on like grim death to the good jobs you have. Mm-hmm. Not so much to be selfish for yourself, mm-hmm. but if you have worked in the industry for a long enough period of time, what you start to realize is that you're not working for the people who are paying you as much as the people you are buying the goods from and mm-hmm. the people you are employing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. Toughest to see that go
yeah.
a way that you don't want it to go. In my case, it is 100%. You know, but well, we all bounce back because we're good, because mm-hmm. because nobody's better than us. That's just the way it's going to be. So, what changes do you see? You know, what do you think our business of cheese and specialty cheese, cheesemongery, will be like in the next 5 years, given the growth rate of recognition and the other cheese that's come out?
Well, that's the fun thing, is I feel like being in beer, being in specialty craft beer, I'm seeing the future of an item like cheese. One of the things that cheese, people that know both sides of my food professional life, I ask me, you know, what's the difference and whatnot, and, you know, the major thing to me is that beer has a social media, has a large integrated social media network, and it does two things. One, it means you have to act fast, because word spreads like that. The minute the Grimms come out with a new IPA, my Instagram explodes. By the same token, you know, so I think that we're reaching a moment where, in an ideal scenario, where people will be conversant enough with, you know, with the equivalents of the Grimms or Monkish or whatever, which would be Neil's Yard Dairy. Or, you know,
Jasper Hill Farms.
Jasper Hill, or, you know, any of a half dozen French affineurs, or things like that. And you would have, you know, and when they via social media announce that a certain cheese is coming on New Wheels of Montgomery's or something like that, or, Jasper Hill announces that Winamere is now available, that there will be both a response within a community, but that response is then translated into sales via via online merchandising.
Right, instead of just showing off pictures of cheese, which happens all the time.
Yeah, because here's the thing, people shop with their phones. One of the great things, there are many great things of working for a big store, a big grocery store like Westside Market. I mean, one, our beer constituency is not the stereotype beer constituency, which I love. But two, you get to see how people's shopping changes, because how people buy boxes of pasta also play into how they buy cheese.
Sure.
And, you know, more and more and more, because I'm one of my other roles at Westside is sort of be a back-end floor supervisor and to be the go-to person when there's a question about food. Because, you know, when you have 75 employees, some of the most important thing that each of those 75 employees does is make the job easier for the other 74.
Yeah. And that's your job.
And that's part of it. And so, yeah, you have a lot
of people. Put cheese in every basket.
Well, you have a lot of people who wouldn't know what harissa is, or wouldn't perhaps even know that there's a difference between Parmigiano and Romano or whatever. But when they have a question, yeah, go to the growler station and find the guy there, and he can flesh it out. And the whole thing is more and more I do that not necessarily for an actual customer with a shopping cart. I'm doing that for somebody who is shopping via that service. I'm doing that for a proxy. And you know, and that just means that I think what has to happen is the wide range of information that's available has to be disseminated better, so
well,
that people know.
Well, that's more is less with mass com and social media. More is less. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I don't know.
Flooding the internet with social media and advertisement in that way, I feel is ineffective. Pull your thing back. You have an Instagram account. Put fewer pictures out, ones that stand out, ones that can help you sell. You know.
Well, the catch, I think, is that you need to build a community.
Yeah, and you need to build your own own account.
Well, you need to build. Well, here's the game, though. Okay, so what I did when I got to Westside and realized that, oh, Instagram is the social media platform of the craft beer community. Okay, well, we have to be there. Well, then, I was able to go. I could tap into this small brewery's community and add a bunch of people, tap into that small brewery's community, tap into Garrett Oliver's network, and find out, you know, and with the, you know, in a short period of time, we had about 1,500 people, which is now about 3,400 people, as our community. So that when I'm able, and so sometimes I'm able just to say, we have the greatest new beer in stock. But sometimes I'm able to say, you know, check this thing out. It's a different kind of India Pale Ale. We have to get over the idea that IPA means the same thing.
And Instagram's your platform for that.
And Instagram becomes our community wherein we educate our clientele. And I just think to myself over and over and over again, God, wouldn't it be wonderful if if there was a cheese account like this where you could go and say, yeah, Roquefort and Gorgonzola are blue cheeses. They are different. They're similar in that regard. They're different. Here's why they're different.
Those sites are out there. I think what you're saying is we need a consolidation of that and use all of the fractured Instagram and social media accounts to bring them together to get some things done.
You need a community.
Yeah. I agree with that. We're going to have to take a short break, and then we're going to come right back and do a little bit of a shorter segment. Segment on craft beer.
Cool.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth-generation cheesemakers, combining old-world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds, or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm here with Martin Johnson talking about working in cheese. So before your new role, you were working in craft beer. Give us some parallels in that business, parallels between beer and cheese business.
Oh, sure. The easiest, simplest parallel is that there's an incredible array of extraordinary iterations of both on the marketplace now. And the general public understands there's
understands beer?
Understands both. Understands this fact that, you know, they shouldn't just be eating craft singles and drinking Budweiser. And they're eager to kind of find a roadmap into these realms of deliciousness. Mm. And that's the single biggest parallel. I mean, I have had, you know, this is, I don't have data to support this, but I have, you know, numerous anecdotal moments. So
we only accept data-based discussions on this radio network. Yeah. I thought we prepared you for this show.
I'll have the analytics on my anecdotes sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
Nate Silver's working on
great.
Them.
That's but, fantastic.
But at any rate, any number of times I've spent 5 minutes talking to people on the beer aisle and then kind of drop back into my role as a back-end supervisor, and I walk over two aisles and find them you know, with similar question marks in their thought bubbles as they stare at the cheese. And I'm like, well, should we talk again? And or in some cases, you know, I see them on the cheese aisle and then I see them on the beer aisle. But one way or another, I think that there's this, and by far and away, some of my most popular Instagram posts are the ones where I actually just take a picture of a beer and a cheese and explain why they work well together. So the curiosity factor is the single biggest thing that I think is similar about both items. I mean, artisanal cheese and craft beer have that. The differences, they diverge, I think, from that point in many very important ways, though.
What I always learned about cheese and beer, and what I am continuing to learn about cheese and beer, is that they're near each other. Mm-hmm. You know,
oh, absolutely,
grows together. Yeah. Cows don't eat a lot of grapes; they do eat a lot of grass. They eat a lot of, you know, they eat things that almost go to beer. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, yeah, that and there's, you know, I used to do cheese and beer tastings with the guy who used to host beer sessions, Ray Dieter. And Ray's big contention, because we would teach cheese and beer classes at 92nd Street Y. And I remember when I booked him for the first class, and he just stood up and said, "Why are we calling this cheese and beer? We should call this better than wine."
Awesome.
And the idea, his idea, and it was a good one, was that most cheeses have a slightly salty finish. Most beers, because the first mouthfeel you get is the carbonation.
Sure.
That kind of resolves that.
Well, yeah, this was my thing with cheeses and wines, where if I pair cheese with wines, I want champagne. Mm-hmm. I want carbonated wines all the time, because it's a paintbrush. It just brushes your mouth clear, you know, and you get all kinds of interesting flavors. My buddy Greg Hessel and I did a couple all champagne and blue cheese tastings, and it was crazy, but it worked immensely well because of that paintbrush effect.
Sure.
And beer, I guess that's what you're saying. Beer will wash away the salt.
I'm saying that beer, yeah, the carbonation will pair well, you know, the way cheese finishes and the way beer starts is is definitely a good combination.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I'm of the notion you have to make them go well in other ways too.
Yeah, texturally, it has to work.
And also the mistake I see whenever I see, here's how to pair cheese with beer stories, is they work solely off of intensity. And I think that creating a Clash of the Titans on your palate isn't always
fun.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, but I mean, I don't think it's necessarily.
Well, some people want to drink beer and eat cheese to have a good time.
Of course.
They don't want it to be a 6-part lecture series.
No, obviously.
And you're going to explain to this person why that doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you.
No, of course. No, and you never want to do that. I mean, crazy. One of my favorite stories from doing cheese tastings was when I was very early on when I was doing this, and so I was still kind of getting my sea legs. I had my first really big group. It was like 28 people. And I'm like, whoa! And there was a group in the corner that got roaring drunk and et cetera, et cetera. And there were a bunch of people very demure. And there were these two Korean women who worked for Donna Karen, and their dresses probably cost more than I make in a month. And I passed around a Pyrenees sheep's milk cheese. And I'm busy explaining how delicate it is, how interesting, how there are all these nuances and overtones of honey and grass and, you know, I look to the side, and both the Korean women have fallen off their chairs. They're rolling on the floor laughing, and I'm thinking, if I was wearing a dress that expensive, the only way you put me on the floor is by knocking me out.
That's because you're not rich.
Yeah,
they can throw those clothes away and buy new clothes tomorrow.
But. And so I asked, you know, if they wanted to, because I was having a fair amount of trouble already with this drunken group in the corner trying to control the class. I asked them if they'd like to share what they were thinking. And one of the women said, you know, that the other woman had said that the cheese tasted like kimchi to her, and that she agreed. And I thought, okay, I'm not sure that I necessarily see kimchi overtones in this cheese, but if you do...
What can I say? Yeah.
Yeah. What else is there? What else is there to add? I mean, everybody's taste is different, and they should be a lot. You know, and everybody is going to experience things different. I mean, when I was working,
can I interrupt you for one second?
Sure.
So I didn't understand exactly what you said made them laugh, and when you said that they were rolling around and they tasted kimchi and cheese.
Yeah, they understood
the
that
way
that was
you
a little,
said it.
They understood that it's a little unusual.
The way that you said it to me, I thought you said that they said that the cheese tasted like him cheating on her.
Oh.
and I wanted to know about these.
Yeah, yeah, like, right. The cheese tasted like somebody cheating.
That's a little messed up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Kimchi's only slightly messed up, but do you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
So I had to think about that, and it brought me to some dark places.
I bet.
But, you know? But going back to semi-normalcy, mm-hmm. You were in your class, there's some drunks, the women are falling on the floor in their expensive dresses.
Right.
And you're doing your thing.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah, and they, you know, the reason, but the whole idea is they thought the cheese tasted like kimchi, and I'm not going to tell them they're wrong.
No.
I mean.
You really can't.
Yeah, well, you can't, and you're wrong to tell them they're wrong. I mean, everybody's taste is the sum total of their sense memories, and their sense memory is different than my sense memory. It's different than your sense memory. It's different from that guy in the booth's sense memory.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have different associations. I used to teach wine and cheese classes with a guy named Peter Jamros. Mm-hmm. He was a wine distributor, and we hit it off really well, and we would do like 7-8 pairings per class, and what we would do is we would deliberately do one that we thought didn't work.
Sure.
And invariably, when I polled the class and said, "What pairings do you think worked?" Several people would always say, "Oh yeah, number 5, that was really good." And Peter and I go, "Oh, okay."
So for parallels, you know, I think what you see is physically. The components go together, mm-hmm. and create a certain taste, texture, experience in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Beer and cheese.
Oh, for sure.
Very different from wine and cheese, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the textures have to be different. And I also notice those things.
Mm-hmm.
So the parallels that I guess I wanted to talk about were just the cult of personality,
mm-hmm.
in terms of cheesemongers and beer mongers or beer mongers, I find them to be very familiar in one another. They're both magicians.
Mm-hmm.
Cheesemongers are also magicians, mm-hmm. as are cheesemakers and mm-hmm. brewers. You
right.
know? So I always look at them as just sort of different wizards of different orders. Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, I try, one of the things I often tell people when they say, "Well, how'd you get into cheese?" I'm like, "Well, how could you not? I mean, the same stuff you pour into coffee every morning creates this myriad of different forms, shapes, flavors, things like that. Isn't, you know, if that doesn't pique your curiosity, then you're not paying attention to life."
Exactly.
And similarly, beer has 4 ingredients.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I really like that. I got one last question for you, then we're going to have to wrap it up. What's your favorite beer or brewery right now on the spot?
On the spot?
I got a guy with a gun in there. He's pointing it at you.
Okay. Well, you're from up in the Boston area. You'll appreciate this answer. I think the beer that when I get gifted with beer that I never give away,
mm-hmm.
is a beer from a brewery in Monson, Massachusetts called Treehouse.
Wow.
And they're really, really awesome. I mean, and their beers are hard. They're best known for their IPAs that are very, very fruit forward. Their best known IPA is called Julius, as in Orange Julius. And they make variations of it, sometimes with many vowels and many S's to indicate that it's even more orangey than usual or more citrus forward than usual. And they, all the beers I've ever had from them are really extraordinary. I mean, it's part of the whole rising tide of Northeastern and New England India Pale Ales from people like Bissell Brothers.
And a lot of stuff going on.
Trillium, which is also Massachusetts. There's an amazing amount of great beer making going on in the Northeast. And
I'll always go to the Allagash White, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They've been around for a long time.
They have. There's a lot of great brewing going on in Maine.
That's awesome. Well, Marty, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's so rare that I get to talk to you. We've been talking for years and years and years, but you know, we finally got a little locked room where we can yell and talk at each other.
We get a session.
Yeah, definitely a session. So go check Marty out at the West Side Market and buy a bunch of beer. Yeah,
3rd Avenue and 12th Street.
Yeah, buy a bunch of cheese. Ask for Marty.
Yeah. Check out some Lively Run Farms cheese.
Yeah, do that too. Thanks so much. And stay tuned for another Cutting the Curd next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.